Election 2016.
Hello and welcome to the final of Manx Radio's constituency debate programmes in the run-up to the election this Thursday. That's September the 22nd. Today, we talk to the people standing in Rushen, a constituency where they now have two votes instead of three. And once again, over the next hour, we will hear the candidates discuss and debate the local and national issues they believe are the most important in convincing the electorate to vote for them. And the five candidates standing in Rushen are business owner Leo Cussons, company director James Hampton, retired teacher Mark Kemp, retiring member seeking re-election Lawrence Skelly, and retiring member seeking re-election Ewan Watterson. And we will hear from the candidates in just a moment. But for the final time, let's join John Moss for a look at the constituency that is Rushen.
When I was a lad, and I think I'm not alone here, something we used to do was draw maps, a map of some imaginary island. Into it, I would cram this and that to make it interesting, and by the time I'd finished, it didn't look too different from the constituency of Rushen, a port on the southern side, a port on the northern side for when the southern side gets a bit choppy, a bit of wilderness up towards Cronkneary Lay and Bradder, a bit of an ancient civilization in the Mole Peninsula, and an old village at Craignish, some bays surrounded by high... No, towering rocky cliffs, that's better. Incidentally, there is a place called Craig Harlot round the corner from Port Erin. Not a whole lot of people know that. And a bit of an island off the coast, only approachable across a dangerous passage. There, just sign that and hand it in to Miss Chumley. It should be worth an A star. Rushen has had bits removed to take it down to the requisite population template. Culby, Ballabeg and Arbury have wandered into Arbury Castletown and Maloo. But the two communities in the ports and their hinterlands dominate the new-look constituency, with its now brace of MHKs. Is a marina still an issue in Port St Mary? With the dip in the island's income, such items perhaps have been slipped onto the back burner. Just along in Bain of Carrica, quite often referred to as Guernsey, the subject of fish conservation is high on the agenda. With licences issued, there are some who describe that system as unfair, penalising some people. Port Erin, on a summer's day, is bustling with its train terminus, its tea shops and prom and delightful beach. Development continues on the upper promenade with apartments springing up. There is one place there which is waiting for something to happen, the former marine biological station. That was on the verge, it seemed, of a new lease on life, but unhappiness on certain aspects, parking being one, saw that slip away. The building, looking more and more unhappy, awaits developments. Let's have a look at the figures. According to the Boundary Review Committee's figures for the constituency based on 2011 census figures, Port Erin Village has a population of 3,530, Port St Mary 1,955, East Rushen 774. There's also 718 from West Rushen, taking the total resident population to 6,977. Now that's about as close to the optimum 7,000 figure as you can get. It's an interesting contest here for a number of reasons that should get them rushing to the polls.
John Moss. Well, now let's meet the five hopefuls standing in Rushen in alphabetical order. Each will now have up to 90 seconds to speak about whatever they wish. So we will start with Leo Cussons.
Good evening. I'm 44 years old. I'm presently the owner of Ken Quines. I was born in 1971 in Glen May. I've brought several businesses or been involved in businesses coming to the island regarding recruitment and ISO 9001. That's also turned into a computer business that I've been involved in. I have a law degree, a 2.1 in law, and a legal practice certificate. So as we enter the last few days, here are some thoughts about the election and the future. For a political system to work, the playing field has to be level, not just for businesses, but on a personal level too. If it is level, people will join in, and this in itself is the road to a stronger, united future. The next 5 years, whatever happens after the 22nd, are going to be difficult. We're going to see unprecedented rate of change as we try to balance our economy with the budget and with the changes in the larger world economy. Direct democracy has a part to play in this, whereby the public can vote on matters and direction that they find important, especially when they have to be hard decisions. Lastly, I wholly respect the responsibility that comes if I'm elected to represent you in the House of Keys. I know that there's been widespread dissatisfaction with the way in which things of the last administration have appeared to lose touch with what has been important. Please be assured that I'll strive to remain engaged with the public and the people's needs throughout my term, and with your support I look forward to being able to contribute to a new government that is committed to changing things for the better and putting people at the centre of that change.
Thank you. Now, James Hampton.
Yeah, thank you. My name is James Hampton. I was born on the Isle of Man, brought up in Castletown. I'm 35 years old. I went to Castle Rushen High School and then went on to do a degree in architecture, first class degree in architecture, and then I went off to Holland for a little while, and then I came back and did a master's degree in London in development planning. I got a distinction from UCL, the Bartlett School. After that, we came back to the Isle of Man and then eventually went back to the UK again when my wife wanted to do another degree. And following on from that, we returned in sort of 2008 and to sort of start putting down some roots, I guess. And that's when I started both of my businesses. And I guess when I started to become interested in politics locally. One of the first issues that I sort of came across politically on the Isle of Man was, as I mentioned in a few of the meetings now, is the AEA report of 2010. And I guess that's really when I realised the way that political decisions are made on the Isle of Man and when the questions started to form in my mind as to how we make political decisions. And that's essentially why I'm here. I mean, the reality, as we all know, is that the process that happens on the Isle of Man is extremely unusual. The way that a chief minister is selected and the way that policy direction is determined, essentially the reality is the public has very little say over the direction that we're heading in. So that's in essence why I'm here.
James Hampton, thank you. Now, I did describe you as retired. I did mean resigned teacher. Apologies for that. But now Mark Kemp.
OK, I'm not resigned as a teacher. I've just resigned. Thank you. OK, so why did I get into or why am I trying to get into politics? I changed careers to make a difference. Being a teacher was something I'd always wanted to do, and I wanted to do that before I hit 40. What I've found, though, in that wonderful career that I've had, is that it's been increasingly difficult to actually make that difference. We've had a £9 million budget cut under this administration, which has made the jobs of teachers really, really difficult. So rather than be a keyboard warrior and moan about it online, I'm actually going to put up and put myself forward and try and help you reclaim your island. Thank you.
Mark Kemp, thank you. Now, Lawrence Skelly.
Yes, first of all, good evening, Beth, and good evening to all listeners, especially the good people of Rushen. My name is Lawrence Skelly, I'm 54. I'm Manx born and bred, married for 30 years to Jackie and have two children, Oliver and Tilly, 20 and 22. My background is in business. I lived for 15 years in California and I was involved in a number of startup businesses there and returned back to the island in 2000 and been involved with startups here on the Isle of Man as well as doing some consultancy. And in 2011, I decided to stand for an MHK on the basis that I recognised that this next administration and this next decade is going to be a very difficult one for the Isle of Man politically and fiscally. And I thought my experience in terms of business would be helpful. And thankfully, the people of Rushen put me in, which is why I'm asking for them again to put me back, because I do believe it is a 10-year job minimum to actually fix the issue in terms of the fiscal position. So I've used my business experience to adapt to the political arena, and I've done every job I've been asked to do, of which I've done a host of different roles, everything from backbenching in two different departments, Department of Community, Culture, Leisure, Economic Development, I've been Chairman of Planning, and also Minister of Economic Development, of which I believe I've now delivered good economic growth and excellent employment opportunities for our young people.
Thank you, Lawrence Skelly. And finally, June Watterson.
Thank you. I'm a 36-year-old chartered accountant and as of this week also a chartered manager. I'm married to Helena and have two children, 5-year-old Sophie and 4-month-old Jack. In the last 5 years, I've been the Minister for Home Affairs and have saved over 20% of the department's budget. The central office has reduced from a peak of 27 down to 9, and we still managed to keep all of our retained fire stations as well as reorganise the estate in order to save money and provide an update for the ageing fire station in Port Erin. We still have a great prison service with more prisoners working, over 3,500 community service hours done in our glens and with beach buddies. The police have crime levels down to 1970 levels and a detection rate double the UK average. All in all, by sticking to the basics and with great people, we've cut costs and improved the service. This is what our island needs at this difficult time, to reduce the drain on our reserves and before resorting to increases in taxes and charges. I want our island to be a nation we can be proud of and happy to bring our children up in, a great place to live, work and invest. As a professional Manxman with a young family, no one's more aware than I am that the economy needs to succeed, public finances have to be carefully managed and that value for money will have to be our watchwords over the next 5 years. I believe I have the right skills to redesign business processes and improve value for money in government.
Jim Watterson, thank you. I think one of the big differences with the 2016 election campaign, even compared with 5 years ago, is the huge role that social media is playing. June Watterson and Lawrence Skelly, you've both posted photographs of your poor old battered shoes, having been around the whole constituency to speak to voters. I just wonder, though, if some people find it a little bit cynical that it is only when their MHK wants them to vote for them again that they go round every house in the constituency. Don't you think, June, it would be much more impressive to do it once a year, say, so you could truly say that you are in touch with your voters?
I don't know. For some people, when you go knocking on the door, once every 5 years is too often. alternatively, some would like to see more of you. I don't believe we could live in a more accessible democracy than we do in the Isle of Man. We are available. Our phone numbers are in the book. Our email addresses are in the book. We must be one of the most accessible places anywhere in the world for this. So, I think all people have to do is make the effort to pick up the phone, to Facebook message, to tweet, whatever that might be, their preferred method of communication, and their MHK is only ever an answer away.
I imagine having two, until very recently, government ministers around the table, that this is going to be quite a different debate than some of the ones I've been having over the past couple of weeks, because Lawrence Skelly, many of the candidates standing this year, talk about how the last administration has failed to tackle the issues that matter, big decisions have been deferred, and essentially that the electorate are disengaged with politics in the Isle of Man. You say, though, that while it has been a challenging few years, we have charted a safe course in this fiscal storm. Why don't more people see that?
Well, I think you have to go back and consider the position we're in. We always look at where we are and where we're going, but we always have to remember where we come from. And the point there is, essentially, you need to look at the VAT loss, 200 million. You know, so that was taken away from our budget. A third of our budget disappeared. Then we've also got the banking crisis of 2008 and the result that had on our particular knock-on effect to our local economy. So you put those two together, got a perfect fiscal storm. So government had to address what it hadn't had to do probably for the last three decades, and that is pull their belt in, rebalance the budget. And obviously the focus there is not just about fiscal, but we wanted to keep a healthy growing economy, and I believe we've actually done that.
Well, we'll come to some of those issues in just a moment. But first, as Minister for Economic Development, your department has been involved in a very public row with a promoter. Number of serious allegations, as an internal and external investigation been launched, a senior member of staff has been suspended. I think people want to know, Lawrence Skelly, why you let this whole thing rumble on without stepping into act earlier?
Well, in essence, there is, as you just said, there is first and foremost a dispute with the promoter over the Tom Jones event, and mediation is open, remains open, and that obviously may go legal at some stage. There is also, the same promoter has made a number of allegations, very serious allegations, five, possibly six. Relevant authorities and bodies have been informed of that, and evidence is obviously being compiled as a result of that. So yes, we stepped in. I actually authorised an external investigation so as to ensure that we do have public trust over these particular matters. And ultimately, going back to the Tom Jones, it is about actually protecting the taxpayers' interest, and that's exactly what I'm doing.
How much are these reviews costing?
Well, this is about, I think, trust, I guess. You come back to disenfranchise there. If there is that there, and it's you have a trial by social media already going on, what you do need to do is to actually have evidence, and that's what we need to do. And in doing so, you need to have an external investigation to actually determine what the real facts are, and a determination will come out as a result of that.
But do you know how much that review's costing?
I don't have a figure on it, but I think the point is here, we all parties need to be aware of exactly what the evidence is, rather than what just part of the information is, which has been promoted on social media.
Over the past few months, attempts have been made to outsource the Villa Marina in Gaiety. I guess, again, people want to know why that decision has been left hanging on for so long.
Well, that was left, that was delayed, and that was delayed on the basis that there was two local companies, one being this promoter who is based across but had a local company based here, wanted to actually put an application in. And of course, we want to give the local companies the opportunity, and that's why we delayed the process. Clearly, all these other issues that are going on around this is affecting the staff, which we're very conscious about, because there's a welfare, and you've got social media here where names are actually being named on there, which is very inappropriate and unfortunate, and we do need to consider their interest. So it has been stalled, it is only delayed, but the progress is actually going forward with regards to the invitation to tender.
And just finally, there's also been the Vision 9 contract for the TT, which hasn't been signed. I suppose some people would say it's not a great track record for your department.
Well, this is about getting it right more than anything else. We've had a very, very strong political mandate with regards to Vision 9, unanimous support in the department, which have been through two procurements for this. We had council minister support, 90% support in Tynwald, and now it's actually getting down to the detail to ensure that we are going to do a deal that is in the best interest of the Isle of Man.
OK, let's look at political engagement then. James Hampton, you believe the fundamental issue when it comes to people caring about politics in the Isle of Man is the fact that people don't really understand how government's formed and therefore how the policy direction is set. And you are quite categorical in your manifesto that no single candidate can promise you anything, not a single thing, in terms of major government decisions. You're committing to this so-called direct democracy. Just briefly explain to me how exactly that will work if you're elected.
Just to go back on a couple of points that you just run through with these two guys before I go on to that, I haven't worn out any shoes in this election, and there's an apology in the back of my manifesto which relates to that. I think that the point that you've made that was discussed there about the £200 million VAT loss, for me, and this is something that's cropped up in quite a few of the emails that I've dealt with since my manifesto went out, for me the critical issue is that when that happened, what should have happened, in my opinion, is that the government should have gone out and said, we've lost this money, that's paying for all of this, what do you want to do about it?
Ask the people what they want to do about it.
Yes, because what happened was a political decision was taken. So a political direction was set off the back of that.
But surely that's what you elect your political representatives for?
Yes and no. You do, but the problem is that we don't get any choice in the political direction on the Isle of Man. So effectively a political direction was taken. The direction that was taken was cuts and charges. Now, that is a political mindset. That's part of a political ideology. There was no choice.
Did they have any other choice, realistically?
Yes, they have plenty of choices. That's a political debate. That's the essence of political debate.
So if you feel so strongly about this, why not join a party then? Because then you can actually, you know, declare what your line is.
Yeah, so party politics is the traditional answer to this. Party politics, people have been trying to bring in on the Isle of Man for 30 plus years. Some of the most popular politicians that we've had over the last 30 years have been trying. And the short answer is that it hasn't happened and it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Now, there's lots of opinions as to why that is the case, and I have my own opinions. But fundamentally, what we're dealing with is, as you sort of put to me originally, is a situation where people don't feel engaged. The point I made to Lord Lisvain when I put my submission to him was that the problem is that because the Isle of Man has quite a poor record, poor track record when it comes to sort of consultations, people are not going to engage unless they believe that something is going to change. And so that's kind of why I feel like I've had to make this commitment.
And I understand what you're saying, but it kind of sounds like you're a one-man bandit. If you still haven't got the support of the other 23 MHKs, what exactly can you do?
That's true. I mean, basically, the position that I'm in at the moment is that I have to make this offer. And what I've said to people who've sort of put that question to me is, that's kind of a double-edged sword. That can be a good thing because, of course, some people say, well, what happens if you don't get a broad base of engagement? And that's a fair criticism. Well, what happens is that there are 23 other people in the current system who are balancing that. The flip side, of course, is that what I've committed to in my manifesto is to put out something immediately after the election to ask that essential question, which is at the core of Lord Lisvain's recommendations, which is the proposal for a programme for government.
And sorry, can I just check, just very quickly, who are you asking? Just the people of Russian or the whole of the island?
The whole island, basically. Right, okay. That's what I've committed to do. So I've committed to put out basically this question, do you want to vote on the programme for government?
Okay. Mark Kemp, something James Hampton raises is the fact that people don't really understand the way politics works in the Isle of Man. Now, I did see a social media post of yours after you declared saying, I have decided to run for government. Is that really what you meant?
Okay, well, I decided to run for MHK. Stop laughing.
I'm not, but it is a fundamental issue, isn't it? I just wonder how well you understand the way Parliament and government works.
Yeah, but to be fair, he's quite likely to get into government because of the way government works.
Thanks very much, James. Okay, right, so time to fight. Luke, what I meant was to get in as an MHK. Now, what I will say as well, because I've been asked several times, is would you take on a ministerial role? And yes, of course I would. I understand as Chief Minister you need political experience. Of course you do, because you're on the international scene as well. But in terms of departmental work, so for example, if I've been in education for 4 years, if I've been an accountant and a company director for 18 odd years, then I have a skill set I can bring to education or to Lawrence's role, such as it is at the moment, or possibly even Treasury. Although Treasury might be a little out of my depth at the moment, because again, the Treasury Minister can sometimes step in for the Chief Minister. So obviously you would like to have somebody with a bit more experience there.
In your manifesto, you say, I think it's fair to say the majority of us are tired of ridiculous decisions made by LegCo. I just wonder which ones you're talking about.
Try every single one.
Really?
Yeah, Luke. All these things that go on, it's not just LegCo. It's the Council of Ministers as well. I've got some statistics here, and I haven't been able to dig out all the facts, but just ballpark. Looking at, I've called it quantifiable waste of public money. I've come up to 102 million so far, and we're looking at things like, where do I start? So in 2014, for example, we've got 14.5 million overspend on capital schemes. We've got 770,000 spent on CI65 consultants, 3.2 million spent on the purchase of Middlemarch from Sefton, going back to 2012.
Okay, Derby well, Health. Let's. Jo Mottison, you have completely wasted money as a member of the Council of Ministers, according to Mark Kemp.
Oh. That's not the way I see it. I'm not particularly aware of the £14.5 million overspend on capital. The vote that we have in normally the June or July on capital spending is about timing issues. So it means that money can be brought over from one year to the next, not as one minister said, it has to be spent before the 31st of March. That's not how budgets work at all. So that would have been money that was carried over into another year, or projects finishing early, or projects advanced. So I think that says a lot about the positive nature of some of the capital projects, that they've been able to be brought forward in order to spend that money in advance. CI65 money, I think that is an investment. If you look at how much has been spent, I accept that's a lot of money, but it's compared to the what was needed to happen in terms of pension reform, it's been required.
770,000 though.
Yeah.
770,000.
Okay. Let's not get bogged down in those sort of details. What we're talking about is the need to engage the public, political reform, and Jim Watson, you have supported a number of initiatives to change the political system, specifically to address the democratic deficit as you see it in the Legislative Council and the Chief Minister elections. Do you know that individual support is great, but the point is nothing has changed. We have been talking about reform to LegCo, to whatever, longer than you've been in Keys. When is something going to happen?
Well, as soon as there's an agreement by the majority of them. And I think having seen a significant turnover now in the membership of the House of Keys, there's a real opportunity there. We're looking at least 7 new members. If I get re-elected, I'd be at least the 4th longest serving member of the House of Keys. And so that's a new broom. That whilst that's an awful lot of experience that is going out through the door, it represents a real opportunity for fresh thinking and coalescing around some of these changes that have been accepted to be needed for quite some time.
Leah Cousins, perhaps unusually actually for a would-be politician, certainly in this campaign, you don't refer directly to reform in your manifesto, but in the political questionnaire that you completed for Manx Radio, you say it's remarkable that as the oldest democracy in the world, we asked and paid someone to tell us how to do democracy. You think the real issue is a culture of people being reluctant to make decisions. How would you change that if you're elected?
Well, I suppose it comes down to partially a change in culture, but partially also, I mean, I suppose it's connected to a number of things. I mean, there's a sort of responsibility to, I suppose, elect people that have a backbone to be able to carry the responsibility and don't look at politics or public service as a career, I mean, or at least to say a career in politics as a career option. It is about, I think, going in there and doing possibly unpopular things or standing up and saying, well, this isn't okay, this doesn't work. And even if that is difficult, I think too often we have reports or different things that are made up, and if we don't like them, and then we say, well, that's not important, that's already cost thousands of pounds. And if we do like them, then we say, okay, we'll go ahead and use that report.
What?
But it doesn't produce, but then the risk is always put onto the side. And
what do you make then of James Hampton's suggestion that really it should be the people who have the ultimate say?
I
obviously spent the last, I think we've done four public meetings or in total, or requisition two. And so I've been at every one of these. And so I've been sort of learning or going along as it's been developing. And I do believe there's a real possibility with direct democracy. And I do believe there's a way of engaging. And the difficulty in the next 5 years, there's going to be really difficult decisions. Things are going to change. And I don't know if there's a way you can do that without having a better consensus than just MHKs deciding these decisions in the House of Keys.
Very briefly, because we're coming up to an ad break. But James Hanton, I just wonder if there's a danger of getting bogged down in the detail when it comes to going out with every decision, recording every single thing that you've
done. I don't anticipate every decision going out. I think if we focus on Lord Lisvain's recommendations, I think they are brilliant. I think that fundamentally, though, the question that you just put of how you bring about that change, you know, Julian's mentioned bringing consensus among the new 24. I'm sceptical about that because of the history. And so that's why I've decided to go the other way, completely sort of walk away from the conventional wisdom, I guess, and go out to the public. So that's essentially how I've come to that decision.
Lawrence Skelly, Direct Democracy.
Yeah, I believe in representative democracy because simply because on the Isle of Man we're small enough, and you touched on it earlier regarding social media about accessibility, and I believe that's what a politician needs to be, is accessible to his electorate and the general public of the Isle of Man. And given the amount of correspondence we deal with, I think that is done very effectively. So that can be social media, that could be collared in the street or anywhere in between. So that, I think, it works very well for us here on the Isle of Man.
Very finally, James Hampton, do you think it's just that you don't actually understand what it's like being an MHK? You're kind of looking in it from the outside.
Undoubtedly, there's a bit of that, but I think ultimately what we're talking about is making decisions. And, you know, as I say, reference to the history, there have been so many people who have tried so many different ways. You know, I look at it and say, well, we have to try a different way. There has to be a different approach to this.
You're listening to Manx Radio's Election 2016 Constituency Debate. Today we are talking to the candidates standing in Rushen.
Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Welcome back to Manx Radio's Election 2016 Constituency Debate. Today, focusing on Rushen, where voters now have two votes instead of three. Let's turn to some of the manifesto staples then, starting with the economy. Mark Kemp, you're not impressed with the claims of 31 years of unbroken growth, suggesting we might not be getting the whole story. You have, though, got several ideas for growing and diversifying the economy. Build casinos and or redevelop Summerland, the Castle Mona, into casinos. You say that'd be great for job creation and large tax intake. Is that really who we want to market ourselves as, though, a place which exploits people's gambling habits?
No, and that would be something that would actually lend itself to James's criteria, direct democracy. Obviously, that's a controversial topic, but it is literally just a suggestion. You know, it's better to have suggestions than to have none. There are other things I've put on there. I mean, we've got to look to the future. What are the future technologies that are coming forwards? Artificial intelligence, robotics and so on, pharma tech, nanotechnology. You know, we should be looking to encourage these sectors to set up over here. We should do our usual, which is innovate.
Lawrence Skelly, you've been in charge of the department about wealth creation and job opportunities. What do you make of what Mark said there?
Well, innovation is a key word which we used in the in the Isle Expo, and I think anyone who attended that particular event, over 1,000 people actually attended that one day event, and that was really promoting, and in my open speech was the Isle of Man is a nation of innovation, and that's really what government needs to do in terms of providing the economic ecosystem for business. It's difficult, I think, for politicians and civil servants to actually come up with the next big idea. What we want to do is to provide the environment so as that innovation can actually come forward through the business community and our local people. One of the most encouraging events of that particular activity was the Pitch It, a bit of the Dragon's Den. We've all seen that on the TV. We had the professional level where it was normal business people making a pitch, but then we also had the young people doing it, and there were 9 teams who actually pitched, of which 6, this is students here in our schools, who actually had good ideas that had gone to the next stage to actually potentially to get funding. Great innovation right here on the Isle of Man, and that's real economic growth, which I would regard as organic.
Mark Kemp?
I've just got a simple question. Do you think it's right to ask A-level students to participate in that during their A-levels?
Well, what you have to think about is, what are they getting their A-levels for?
Do you think it's right Do you think it's right to call on someone to spend time on something else when they should be focusing on their exams?
They had the full support of the Department of Education. It was through the Junior Achievement that they actually did this. And really, you've got to ask yourself, if you're a parent, you know, what opportunities do you want to create for your young people? And that's what we're trying to do here. The Department of Economic Development is really about not just economic growth, which is a very bland statement. This is about opportunities for our young people. Academic route, that's fine, that's great. That creates more opportunities. But we must think about vocational opportunities, and that's exactly what we have been doing.
Without academia, they can't go on to the next level.
Well, they can.
Now, I was teaching them, these students. They were one of the ones invited was actually my junior achievement group. They were fantastic, and I was really pleased that they were invited. Mm-hmm. But it was the wrong time. They had A-levels.
Well, let's not get bogged down in that. James Hampton.
Yeah, I think mainly just there was a couple of points. One of the things that I've spoken about when talking about the Economic Development Fund is one of the concerns that I have with it is I don't really think that the government is the best place to be making sort of cash investments. I think, as I mentioned in my manifesto, what the government can do is provide all the other ingredients that are needed for these ideas to come forward. And I think it's quite interesting. One of the things that Lawrence has just mentioned there was the expo. And the keynote speaker at the expo was Jim Mellon. And one of the points that he has been on and on and on about is the way that all economies are going to evolve. Service sectors, which the Isle of Man is heavily reliant on, are going to decline. And he is kind of prime example of somebody who is a forward-thinking investor. And I think that sort of model is not something that government can replicate. He's looking at all of the future technologies and the way that technology is going to drive forward, and we are going to have to look at innovation, which is quite basically what Lawrence is talking about. But I think that the way that we've approached it is perhaps too risky and too expensive, that we could have focused on areas that are less risky and less potential to go wrong, and focused on things that we can actually provide to back up everything else that's needed.
I just wonder if this is one of the decisions that you go out to the people about and how well placed they would be to make such big decisions.
Well, yeah, you see, looking at investment in risky sectors requires a certain eye, and I don't think that the government is the body that has that eye, if you know what I mean.
So who is the body who's got it then?
Well, I mean, from running my own business, I've been approached at several points during the life of my businesses by people who have spotted something, and they are people who have an eye for investment. I don't believe that the government is that, has that eye, because that's something that you develop.
Okay, government doesn't have the eye for investment.
That is exactly why we depoliticised this particular fund. We put it actually into professional hands, so as those decisions weren't made by politicians or made by the executive government. If I may just go back to the point with regards to what Mark's talking about there, you mentioned academia there and the vocational opportunities that are available for our young people. We just rolled out a whole host of new apprenticeship schemes, one in accountancy just recently, one in ICT, and these are actually being oversubscribed for opportunities for our young people.
Leo Cousins.
It's about creating the right environment. If you create the right environment, you can bring in all sorts of resources from different places, people that currently might not be involved. It's a question, and using sort of the flexible, obviously, law system that we have, we can encourage new industries too. I'd like to see an incubation centre sort of set up where you have a centre of excellence. Yes, thank you. In the south, where you're sort of having a combination of creative and different sorts of industries working together, because often these then feed off each other, and not only that, it becomes a centre where people can go.
Mark Kemp?
Yeah, just two quick points. First of all, on incubation, just picking up very quickly on Leo, as regards incubation, we've already tried that and it's failed miserably. So when we do this, we have to learn from the lessons of the past. And I know people are sick of hearing that, but we actually do. Now, secondly, as regards these qualifications and incentives, I mentioned in my first opening statement, 85% of students were not returning to the island. You have a policy document which pretty much backs that up. The Chief Minister has pretty much backed that up. And it's incredible, isn't it, really, that the government are now in this year, an election year, coming up with all these incentives and recognising this fact. I myself and Castle Rushen High School are involved in writing our own qualifications, Castle Rushen for ICT and myself for accountancy and finance.
I want to come back to the education bit in just a moment, but first let's bring Jim Watson in here, because under the heading Going for Growth, which could almost be the title of a TV programme, you say the economy is performing well, the challenge is to keep that going without diluting our unique way of life. What does that really mean in layman's terms for the people of the island?
It's about still having the Isle of Man feeling like the Isle of Man that they've always known, without the significant cultural change that some people, I think, have associated with rapid population growth. In terms of some of the points that others have raised, I mean, the decline of the service sector was, you know, recognised 10 years ago in Vision 2020. We've known that that's going to be on the decline. That's why there's been that push towards other areas, the e-gaming and the spin-offs on that, and a real focus now about attracting intellectual capital on the basis that they are highly qualified people. They bring a real skill set. They generate good money with paying good wages, and that's the sort of that's the future of our economy. In terms of, Lawrence talks about, you know, the IT and engineering apprenticeships, and in terms of the point that Mark makes about our young people going away and coming back, not coming back, I don't necessarily agree with the figures. I don't know where they've come from, but in terms of our young people, firstly, we shouldn't be afraid of them going away and spreading their wings, and some people will come back at different times. Some will come back very soon after graduation. Some might wait until they retire. Some might wait until they're looking to bring up a family. But I don't think we should be afraid of that. But in terms of making those people who have the skill sets that we need on the Isle of Man, then there is a case there for greater incentives to bring them back earlier.
Mark Kemp mentioned the Department of Economic Development's document proposals to accelerate economic growth, and it does say the great majority of students supported through the Isle of Man government grant system do not return to the island once they've graduated from university. Lawrence Skelly, what do you do about that? Is it a problem?
That's no new news, that. I think we've all recognised that for some time. When I took over as minister, one of the first things we did is actually have a re-evaluation of what June's just talked about there, the Vision 2020 strategy statement about the economic growth. And what was very, very clear there is that that growth in particular sectors, the e-business, the innovation sectors, all the tech sectors, that growth was actually very rapid and going faster than we suspected. Therefore, one of the issues around this is skill shortage. You know, we have a situation right now where we got unemployment here at the lowest levels being for 10 years. We've seen increase actually in a minimum wage twice in the last 10 years and 2 years, nearly 10%. So we're struggling actually filling jobs, and that's why you've got such big applications in these new areas.
Okay, so what do you do about it?
So that's why we've got the document you just mentioned there, how do we accelerate that growth? And we've just now kicked off, and we had this with the business sector just last week where the Chief Minister kicked off, and that is beyond Vision 2020. How are we going to actually tackle these issues? And the number one issue is skill shortage.
How are you going to tackle it?
Well, that's the consultation is going to do. One of them is, how do we incentivise people to come back? How do we get more people to actually come to the island and fill those jobs that we need? And
it's a lot of questions with respect, Lawrence, but what people want is to know what, if you're elected, you do about it.
And if we go back to, that's why you have a form of consultation. You engage with the business community, you engage with the public, and of course you have something there that the next administration will have some evidence, real evidence, to say that's what we're going to do. So if we want to attract people to come to the island, we want to get our people, young people, to come back to the island, how are we actually going to do it? And that is in the form of various incentives.
Is that sort of saying that you haven't got the answers you hope somebody else has?
We've already put some of these forward, haven't we? Like the national insurance holidays and the £50 million economic development fund. So there are ideas there that are being progressed by government.
So, yes. Right, James Hampton.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that has come out during the public meetings that we've had, from my point of view, one of the interesting things that I found with my own business, I realised only this year that throughout the 8 years of running my own business, over 80% of my clients have been engineers. And these are production engineers, people who've got fascinating little businesses. And the Isle of Man is actually quite strong in that sector. So one of the key things for me, and I know this has already happened to a certain extent, is linking up these businesses, which are actually the future, because as we've already discussed about the decline in service, these innovative and productive businesses, linking them up with our education system more strongly, because that's the fact is that these jobs are much more deeply rooted when you've got somebody who's got that specific skill set. But one of the things I wanted to ask Mark about, actually, is he mentioned that there'd been a failure of the incubation process, and I wondered what, because I don't exactly know what you meant. So
it's been handled in the past by someone in the finance sector. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, it didn't work. A lot of money was thrown at it, and
a government
didn't
project.
It was run by a private company.
Right.
Okay. Let's focus. Still staying with this, Leo Cousins. You want to make a point?
Just one thing. Last night we had at the public meeting, someone brought up the fact of actually university and education on the island, and that there could possibly be a case. I mean,
of looking into the fact of actually making education sort of one of the businesses of actually attracting international and different students here, because it is a sort of ideal learning environment, and of course that works on so many other levels.
So something else,
hence the courses, in master's courses in banking and finance that are available through the college.
When it comes to education, Neil Cousins, you think government needs to proactively elevate the status of teachers as one of the most important pillars in society. What would you see that meaning in practice?
Well, in simple terms, I mean, if the future is important to have educated people in the future, and education having that will enable us then to compete in the world and I suppose locally too.
Do you mean teachers being paid more money?
Yes, please.
You've resigned.
Yeah. I think we have to be very clear about the statement that when we say and then we look at that, because too often education isn't a question. I mean, if we don't get education right, it's one of the important building blocks. Without getting that right, a lot of the other things aren't going to work. So it's important that we value them. It's important that we say, as a government, these are really important here. It's more important than maybe a lot of other things, because with that, a lot of other things come off the side of that, and that encourages then a whole increase or a bettering in the environment.
Mark Kemp, you've got some pretty fundamental suggestions about how the island's education system should be changed, including children starting school at 7, following the more Scandinavian model. I just wonder if there's a cost implication there for working parents. But you also say all students should have their tuition fees paid and all preschool as well. How much would that cost?
I don't know off the top of my head how much that would cost, I'll be honest.
So how would you envisage paying for it then, if you don't?
Well, it should end, if we were to start at age 7, which at the moment we actually can't do because of the university system in the UK, there needs to be 13 years of employment. So there's a bigger question that needs to be asked there. But in terms of actual costs for the preschool or the gap for those 2 years from 5 to 7, it would be cost neutral anyway, because children would be in some form of preschool or school anyway.
But you have to make sure there's enough places, and with, you know, at
yes,
the moment preschool, there aren't enough places for
That's
all
right.
the people who want them. So how do you make sure that there are?
How do we make sure that there are? Well, simple statistical analysis of how many kids we actually have on the island. How many do we have? How many placements do we need? What buildings do we have, or what buildings does government have that are lying dormant at the moment that we can utilise? Perhaps government can incentivise private business by reduced rent on those buildings. You know, there's any number of things we could be doing actually to incentivise this issue.
It still costs money though.
Maybe in the long run it might cost a few pounds, but surely the education of our children is important, and if we do need to throw money at something like that, then we should do.
Now,
I'll just point something out very quickly.
If there's no money to throw, though, Mark Kemp, then...
Well, you're saying that, but if we change the budget process, there actually is money to throw at these things. And let's not say throw, because it sounds horrible. If we change the budget process to zero-based budgeting, we can save between 50 and 130 million pounds a year straight away. So there's one issue.
Lawrence Skelly, if that's the case, why haven't we done that until now then?
Well, you're talking about two things here. First of all, you're talking about radical change in the education system. And to do that, I think you need obviously a review. And the first question you say, is it not working what we actually have right now? Yes, I think government has done a lot in terms of the preschool cover. And that, I think, has been very important.
Well, you've talked in your manifesto about how you've achieved preschool equalisation in Rushnell. That was during one of your election interviews. But I'd just say, what about the rest of the island?
Well, that's exactly it. Right. What we didn't have it in Russian, and the new system allows for this now, and therefore you don't have the postcode lottery, which is what we had before. But that was just about being fair and equalising something. You're going onto the budget issue there, and there is actually a midterm financial strategy which talks actually, or rather not talks, it actually has a built into the strategy about priority based budgeting, and I believe that is a very good method to go forward. And one of the issues you could get around this, and one of the big arguments, is about individual department budgets. As we currently are structured as a government, we are individual legal entities. And if we became a single legal entity, you have the opportunity to have that marriage there with regards to a budget.
Very quickly, Jim Watson.
Well, if in terms of the zero-based budgeting idea, this is exactly what we've done in Home Affairs. We've designed the service. We've worked out how many people you need to deliver that service. And I presume that that's where the £50 million figures come from, because we've saved certainly about 20 million. Sorry, we've said 20%, about 10 million in that department.
Okay, let's move on very quickly to another big election issue, health. Leo Cousins, you want a sugar tax. How much would that bring in, do you think?
It's not so much about how much money that it would bring in. It's sort of in connection with it. First, obviously, there's the natural health benefits of it, but it's also in connection with the fact you can do these innovative things. And so we wouldn't have it on produce that was locally produced, so in cafes. So it encouraged people to go out to a cafe and to buy their cakes and to produce sort of products or to produce chocolate. But in a way, it's a way of leveling the playing field. But it also, you can do innovative pieces which can work, have two sides of advantage to them.
James Hampton, when it comes to health, you say you'll ask the public to demand a complete clean sheet review of health and welfare services, focusing on the level of provision desired. I'm pretty sure that desired provision will cost more than we have.
You see, this is one that was put to me last night. Somebody buttonholed me and said, you said in your manifesto you want a high standard of living and you're prepared to pay for it. Does that mean you're going to raise taxes? And I said, well, that depends on what we actually want, because at the moment you're being provided with a service and there is no definition. You're not being asked. For one, you don't know if it's being run efficiently. And secondly, you're not being asked whether it's what you want and how you want to pay for it. And that's essentially what I'm talking about, is that it doesn't matter. You can't say that you just want to raise taxes because you want more service until you know exactly what it is being offered, until that debate happens. And this again comes back to the previous point about priority budgeting. I'm very much in favour of priority budgeting. I think Mark's got a great idea there, but for me the key issue is whose priorities, because it doesn't matter if you've got a priority budget if they're not your priorities.
Okay, we are very fast approaching the end of the programme. I just want to ask you all, what is the single most important issue in Russian, and what will you do about it if elected? Mark Kemp.
Single most important issue in Russian. For me, it's what's there for the kids, what's there for our children.
So what will you do about that?
Well, there's a few things in my manifesto that I'm talking about, i.e. Getting a skate park into the Balakilia area.
And there's all plans for that.
It's under consultation at the moment. Russian parish commissioners are doing a cracking job on trying to roll this forwards.
OK, Lawrence Skelly.
Well, I think the single biggest issue has been the derelict property matter, and I've been glad that we've been able to bring legislation.
Well, it has been dealt with, so what about the next 5 years?
That's exactly what we are. If you're a politician, that's what your number one job is actually dealing with legislation. And we brought that in. It's not just going to be a benefit for Russian, it's actually going to be a benefit for the Isle of Man, because we have a problem all over this island. So that, I believe, is the single biggest thing we've done.
OK, it doesn't actually answer the question about what you would do for the next 5 years, but we are approaching the end of the programme, so each candidate now has a few seconds to sum up why they think you should vote for them on Thursday. We're going to do this in reverse alphabetical order, so start with June Watterson.
It's simple. If you're looking for an experienced local candidate with a professional background, a proven track record, rooted in the community, then I hope you'll turn out and vote June Watterson on Thursday.
Lawrence Skelly.
Yes, I want to build a brighter future for all our people, and not just Russian, but everyone in the Isle of Man. And the watchword for me is sustainability. And I believe we need a sustainable economy, we need a sustainable budget, but I want to also encourage enterprise and innovation, respect our community and our environment, and promote education and learning.
Mark Kemp.
I'll just say this. Ask yourselves, what sort of world do you want your children growing up in, and your grandchildren? Do you want a better world for them? Do you want a better island for them? If so, vote for somebody like myself who can actually get the job done and won't stand in the Timwell chambers and allow himself to be bullied.
James Hampton.
I think the main thing for me is that, as I've said in all the meetings, you're about to gamble. The public is about to gamble, and there is no guarantees, and it's only the public that can change that gamble. What I've said is that I will ask the public directly, both by post and via the democracy.im website. I've asked everybody to keep hold of their voter registration numbers and their polling district numbers, because those can be used in a future system.
And Leo Cassens.
I believe it's about solving problems, and we're going to have to be creative in solving those problems. It's about taking ownership of issues that will come from the constituents, and that is it in short.
Well, that brings us to the end of this programme, and indeed this series of constituency debates for 2016. Today we've been hearing from the candidates standing in Russian. My thanks to Leo Cousins, James Hampton, Mark Kemp, Lawrence Skelly and Ewan Watterson. This series has been produced overall by Catherine Nicol, along with Mark Tiley and today Alex Brinley. Keep up to date with all the latest election news by going to the dedicated section on the Manx Radio website. We will be back on Thursday evening from 6 p.m. until whenever it's all over for the election night special. So from Roger Watterson and myself, thank you for listening, and until next time, goodbye.